Let's just switch away for a moment back to our scheduled programming. Moves are underway in some sporting codes to ensure the cultural mix of athletes on teams will be reflected in other roles, including management and coaching. Former All Black Savatama Ironi Clark has recently been appointed New Zealand Rugby's first Pacifica Engagement Manager. The role came partially out of the Respect and Responsibility Review in 2017, which highlighted issues around player welfare and participation numbers in the game. New Zealand Rugby wanted someone with a deep understanding and commitment to rugby and the ability to engage with the Pacifica community and ensure their views were aired at the top table. Ironi Clark was born in Apia. He played 10 tests for the All Blacks between 1992 and 1998. He's the father of current Blues and New Zealand's seven-star Caleb Clark. The 51-year-old was part of a Pacific advisory group set up to help bridge the gap between Pacifica and non-Pacifica involved in Auckland's rugby community as part of the Navigating Two Worlds project. In fact, you may have heard recently our interviews on that project with Tracy Atinga and also with Leslie Firkin, who has been doing a considerable amount of research and collaboration with clubs in Auckland as well as with New Zealand Rugby. Tracy's the chief executive of Kanaloa Hawaii Rugby, which is a Pacifica-owned professional team bidding for Super Rugby status. Well, big introduction. Talofa, Lava Aroni, and welcome to 9 to Noon.
It's a pleasure to be on your show this morning.
We can't ignore the elephant in the room. I was just reflecting, we were reflecting this morning, what a wonderful reprieve and morale builder having rugby back, having all our sport back has been for the last few months, both being able to watch it on the telly and support your franchise and at community level. It's actually illustrated just how important still sport and the human connection it brings is to the well-being of communities and of people.
Absolutely, and it's so wonderful too in with sport or particularly rugby, how it's really brought the crowds back. It's wonderful to see. Of course, it's dear to my heart to see the Blues being a lot more being really successful this year, both on and off the field. So we are seeing, and we're seeing rugby, New Zealand rugby at its best, so it's really, really wonderful to see this.
It's been back to grassroots stuff, hasn't it? It's been back to people really appreciating what we have here. And yes, we have to pause for a time. We'll find out how much in the next few days. But again, it helps motivate us to do what we've got to do to get back to the extraordinary freedoms we had for those few months.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that is wonderful to see. I think what we're really also seeing, that we are seeing from the grassroots, the impact of grassroots as well. We're seeing that the possibility of All Blacks playing Mitre 10, where the days, even playing club rugby those days, where it really did bring the crowds. It really, you see the support of the impact on the communities, and it brought families to even these afternoon games, seeing families come to the ground. Those are just wonderful, and that's what rugby really is about.
Kids on the field, kids allowed on the field near the players again. It was a hark, a harking back to days and a bit of a reconnecting that perhaps had been lost. And maybe we'll chat a little more at the end about some of rugby's decisions about where to from here and what can be learned from this experience. But I don't want to not give you due time to talk about this task at hand. We learnt so much from our discussion with Leslie Firkin and with Tracy Atinga about the efforts that are underway, actually, to achieve what? What is your task, as you see, to ensure that Pacifica, in every role in sport and in every role in rugby specifically, are participating, their skills and talents and character is brought to every table? What's the task, as you see it?
Absolutely. And we are seeing now, of course, the contribution to rugby, I mean, of the Pacific communities. The Pacific communities are huge stakeholders in terms of sport with rugby. I mean, we're seeing it on the field, but what we are recognising, and this is what Navigating Two Worlds is partly really about, and what my role is for, is really recognising some of the roles where we don't feature so prominently, areas of administration, even governance. I think that's one of the key focuses of where we want to see a lot more. You know, it's been, I suppose, the past, we've seen role models such as Tuafasina Sir Brian Williams in those very early days that really kind of started the aspirations and dreams of all Kiwis, but particularly Pacific young boys as well. And then, of course, you had the likes of Mike Sir Michael Jones and others through that time that really started to continue to spark it. So there were role models that were on the field and so that really sparked it. But what we're looking for now are really trying to provide pathways and find more role models, specific role models, in those fields of governance, of administration. And it's not to say that the capability is not, but certainly the capability is there. But I think they just haven't really been promoted for our Pacific communities. So I suppose once we do begin to move towards that, I think we will see more participation of Pacific communities within different parts of our game.
It was really interesting talking to Tracy about what has to change and whether it's about encouraging and inviting into existing structures and perhaps existing structures putting away their unconscious biases that we all have. Everyone always likes to have people around them who are just like them. It's the same barriers that women have had in many ways. But her point was actually the structures are missing out. Do we just leave the structures the same and invite and encourage and promote Pacifica into roles? Or do we learn from Pacifica structures?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are many frameworks that that represent Pacific in terms of the holistic approach. What does holistic well-being look like? What are some of the frameworks that exist in terms of leadership frameworks, leadership principles that we can apply? And I think one of the areas to really start in here is certainly around the cultural responsiveness of our rugby communities in New Zealand. And I think that can provide a lot more of an understanding and an awareness and empathy towards Pacific communities. And I think that once we lift the cultural responsiveness and enhancing it, I think we can begin to see a lot more in terms of retention, how do we, in terms of when we're recruiting in that area, is there a Pacific lens when it comes to recruiting, both from a governance, even at an operational level, whether at super or PU level, or even club levels? What are some of the recruitment processes? Are there cultural lenses over those too? So I think at all levels we can see if there's those pathways provided for, then we can see a lot more participation by Pacific into those key areas.
Could you get specific from your own experience of, and look, it was interesting talking to Olsen Filipina just recently, a wee while ago, slightly different situation. He went to Australian League. He was an absolute trailblazer in Australian League, and his experiences there, as told in his book, were extreme, just extreme and horrible racism and other flaws as well within the way a sport looked after its players. But what was your own experience as a player of the disconnect between the sport and its hierarchies and the people who were playing it, culturally, socially, emotionally? What's some of the things you'd point to?
Here's one particular one. I remember the earlier days that now Sir Graham Henry, our great All Black coach that has taken us on to do great things and winning World Cups. But in his early days when he took over as Auckland coach at Auckland Rugby, he had some very ageing All Blacks that were there, some of the greats of our game. And so, of course, succession planning was important. And at that time, I'd been in the Auckland team for a couple of years. There's others like Sir Michael Jones was in there. But, of course, in terms of Graham thinking, we need to provide a way for Auckland to continue on this great success. And one of the things he did in terms of succession planning, he brought a whole lot of younger Pacific Island players that were coming through that were really exciting, a lot of flair. And what we began to see, though, was that Graham had a one-style-fits-all coaching. He won't mind me telling this. I've often told this story. And in his coaching style, it was the way that he coached. It was the barking. It was very much the teacher, the headmaster style in the old days, how he coached. And, of course, in that style, what we began to see was that a lot of the Pacific boys in the team weren't responding as I think Graham would have expected them to behave in a way that it was motivating, but it wasn't had the actual opposite effect. And so as a result of this, Graham began to drop some of these young players until finally he stopped and asked my Samantha Jones, and like, how do I get the best out of my Pacific Island players? And we began to talk them through in terms of understanding the mindset and the heartset of Pacific and what they're thinking when you're shouting and swearing or other things like that. And so he realized this. And what the wonderful thing that I really appreciated about Graham Henley back in those early days to Graham was he recognized, obviously, the landscape of his team had changed. And what he began to do was he changed his whole philosophy and approach to coaching to embrace the wide multicultural team that he was now bringing together. And as a result of that, Graham's whole of the Auckland rugby began to continue on that success, a new level of a success through the mid to late 90s. And so that's what really, I think that's probably one key example that I can give, just Graham recognizing his own cultural understanding, his cultural responsiveness really was at that time at a very low level. And he realized that the common denominator here was himself. So rather than continuing on and dropping players, he realized, I'm going to change as I realize I want my team to be successful. And I think that's really important for an individual when I think about the pathways for Pacific in different areas. I think cultural responsiveness is really one of the key, most important factors of that. And so there are other factors too. But that's one example, Catherine.
How does that progress that has been made on the field with respect and understanding for Pacifica cultures, for any other culture actually, and for sensitivities to people's different perspectives and different understandings of what respect means to other areas of the sport? Because what Leslie Firkin's work shows is that, well, Pacifica frankly dominate our football codes and the stars of our football codes on the field. That is not happening in other critical areas of decision making, certainly not as much. Maybe some progress in terms of coaching, I'd be interested in your view, but not happening elsewhere. So how do we take what's been learned on the field to other roles?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that is the education of our rugby community is really important. And I think one of the key areas is really, again, it comes up because it really comes down to building those relationships. It always comes down to building relationships first and foremost. And I think one of the key ways to do that is by really, again, educating around cultural competency of our rugby community. And then from there, really seeing and recognizing the capability, because the capability is there, but it's not as promoted, I think, in our game administration. We are seeing now, in terms of coaching levels, we're seeing a lot more of the likes of Tana and other Pacific coaches. I mean, Dave Rennie, for others that are already there, but I think we've got some of them at the next tier down. We recognize there are many other coaches, Pacific coaches that are there that are really starting to come through. But I suppose one of the other areas, not just in coaching, but I think the administration of the game, the governance of the game as well, throughout New Zealand rugby, through the PUs and the Super Rugby clubs, I think we only recognise and count on one hand how many Pacific community are in those governance areas. So just understanding that, because, again, we talk about diversity and inclusion, it's the diverseness of mind and thought really brings the richness and within the club. And I think that really enhances any organisation, any club, any provincial union, and any Super Rugby. And I think that's what's really important. New Zealand Rugby has started to show the way. Certainly at the board level, we have a diverse board there. And, of course, reflecting that, of course, is my role now at New Zealand Rugby.
What would success look like as you plot your path here? Mm. And again, I said it's a question of whether you sort of encourage more Pacifica participation in the existing corporate and hierarchical structures, or whether you rethink them, or perhaps, as is happening with Kanaloa Hawaii Rugby, you operate or open a space for people to participate coming from a different model, coming from a model that they're far more comfortable with, and that, in fact, just innately is what it is. Do we need to go wider?
Yeah. No, I believe it's a bit of both, Catherine. I can see that certainly that, you know, we want to ensure that, again, in terms of capability, that we do have people who in the Pacific community who are great at administration, who are in those governance spaces even today. And so just trying to really direct them towards rugby, I think that's an important thing, how we provide pathways for that. And I think, yes, do we need, in terms of creating something different? No, because I think if we increase the capacity of Pacific within these the provincial unions, within the clubs, within our Super Rugby's, they will already then bring that diverseness of thought, diverseness of in terms of frameworks and role models. And I think that's probably one of the key things that I can see that's going to be really important.
I know some Auckland clubs have been involved in this project for a couple of years. What sort of broader, broader response around the country are you getting, whether it's at club level, whether it's at provincial level, or whether it is at professional level? How much are people saying, oh, yeah, and how much are they saying, oh, yeah?
Well, that's a wonderful thing. We're probably really at the start. And I think the wonderful thing about it is that we are hearing from our provincial unions and from our clubs that we do need more understanding of Pacific community, given that now we're seeing a lot more of the diaspora of Pacific throughout New Zealand, and not just in the main centres. We're looking at even some of the smaller, in some of the provincial, rural provincial unions, the South Canterbury's, in the Deep South. We are seeing a lot more now, even at Heartland Rugby, a lot more contribution or participation of Pacific in those provinces. So really then trying to come alongside and hearing the call of our provinces about understanding Pacific people better. And I think that's what's really probably the biggest requirement and need at the moment, is really understanding how do I work better with Pacific communities now that they're in our levels of within our game. And I think it's important that one is lifting responsive cultural responsiveness, but I think also to hear again is thinking about the pathways of Pacific into those key areas, whether it's coaching, whether it's administration, and other key, even voluntary. So I think those are some of the key things that we need to really meet and work with our provinces where the needs really are.
Ronnie, I would like to look at that higher level, and there straight away we're into, you know, what matters most, and people have very different views on that. But looking at some of the decisions that are being made around Super Rugby right now, there's this big standoff between New Zealand and Australia over what a Super Rugby competition might look like. Do you have views on whether the Pacific nations themselves have been, their national teams have been getting anything like a fair opportunity in the international game, and whether this is a chance to rethink?
That's the wonderful thing about COVID, I think, if you can say, if I can say that, it's really caused a reset in many different areas and different at different levels. World Rugby, for one, we're seeing Fiji move in a different and at another level in terms of at World Rugby level. So I think, you know, certainly it's the aspirations of Pacific within our Pacific region, and also Pacific within Australia, New Zealand, just seeing the aspirations, seeing whether it's a team and at super level, or whether it's just seeing the Pacific national teams go to tier one levels. And so I think that we are starting to see shifts. We are starting to hear conversations. We are starting to hear a lot more of Pacific featuring at these different levels, at higher levels. And so that's really exciting, and especially when you hear the likes of Kanaloa and the talk around different levels of participation of a Pacific team at Super. So this is quite an exciting time.
There's clearly a complete reinvention of the Super Rugby happening. And if Australia and New Zealand can't agree, in some ways, that's terrible news, right? We need Australia to be strong. It's our nearest and, I was going to say nearest and dearest competitor, but maybe in a different world it wouldn't be, you know. It would be Manu somewhere. But if that breaks down, is a plan B for New Zealand rugby to take its Super Rugby Aotearoa concept and include more island teams and go it alone? Would that be destructive to the overall endeavour, or is it a plan B?
That's a really good thought, and I think New Zealand Rugby are going through those processes at the moment. I mean, we're already, as we said earlier, Catherine, we're seeing some wonderful rugby at the moment, and that's just purely our New Zealand rugby teams, franchises performing and beautifully at its best, and it's just that alone has caused a lot of excitement, not just in Aotearoa, but overseas and around the world. And I think that's, you know, I think I'd certainly like to see a collaboration a lot more of New Zealand and Australia, that we can work something together. But I'm also excited at the fact that, wow, if New Zealand if we can't work in partnership, which I'm thinking, I'm really hoping that we can, but New Zealand still has such a wonderful breed of rugby. We've seen some exciting rugby here. And then I think it should attract a lot more across from overseas, elsewhere as well, possibly. So we'll see what happens. And I think, as I say, New Zealand rugby are going through those processes at the moment.
I asked you what success would look like, and obviously you are at the start of the job, and obviously that's all a bit disrupted at the moment, for the next few days anyway. So none of us knows quite what's going to unfold. But if you sort of put your markers on the board at the moment, what are you hoping, say, for the next 12 months, say, for this coming season? Is it getting out and meeting people? Would you like to see some at club level or others sign up and enlist to the project that's already been happening?
Yes, I think that's what success looks like. It is going to be, and it's a five, are we looking at 5 years ahead? Are we looking at, if I was to turn around and look, I'd see a lot more participation in Pacific in those different key roles. Not only because obviously it's part of my role, but certainly it's the diverseness of thought that it brings. It could change the whole look of what club rugby might look like, even at provincial union. I could see certainly the lift of cultural understanding and safety of Pacific people and working together within our rugby community. And I think even seeing a change of looking like what does governance sports look like in terms of diversity? Can we see a lot more Pacific? I can see a lot more Pacific involved in those key areas as well. So I think that's where certainly the focuses are, and we'll be working together in terms of, and depending on how COVID certainly steers things over the next while or so, we'll know exactly then what will be our key priorities.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely to talk. Thanks for your time. And here's hoping, we all are dearly hoping, that what is unfolding at the moment in Auckland and possibly beyond is something we can move quickly to contain, because there's a lot of good rugby to happen before the end of the year if that can happen, right, Aroni?
Yes, absolutely, Catherine. It's exciting. So hopefully we'll see how it goes. Thank
all right. You, so much. You take care. Aroni Clark is our guest. He is the newly appointed by New Zealand Rugby, its first Pacifica engagement manager. And as we were saying, he was part of the Pacific Advisory Group that was set up to help bridge the gap between Pacifica and non-Pacifica involved in Auckland's rugby community. This was called Navigating Two Worlds, and we did some interviews on that quite recently that you might want to go back and listen to. Actually, that was Tracy Atinga and Leslie Furkin. Tracy, who was also part of that advisory group and has had very hands-on roles in sport, spoke very frankly about her experiences. And Leslie Furkin, who's been involved in study and research and also has been involved in a two-year pilot involving some Auckland clubs. It's a really interesting development that's happening. You can go back and find those on the 9 to Noon website.